night, everyone. For those of you just joining in, we're here with Aaron Madden of Furthermore Brewing. And now we're going to break it down into talking about the actual beers, going through them all. Aaron, I mean, I know you guys got a lot of beer, but you have a very specific one that you got coming out right now, kind of new to the market. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I spent 12 hours delivering it yesterday to Spring Green in Madison. It's the Ascura, and it is a... this beer was sort of waiting to be made for 2 years. We did an event at RP Pasta over on the east side, and there's this crazy coffee company, coffee roaster right next to RP Pasta that was entertaining some of its growers from various countries. And that coffee company, of course, is Just Coffee. And Chris Staples, ever conscious of pushing Furthermore into the hands of those who may or may not want it, walked over with a couple of six-packs and just dropped it at the party. And it turns out that the folks from Just Coffee really liked the Knot Stock and hadn't had a beer quite like it. And of course, I said, well, no one has until I made it. The first thing out of their mouth was, you ever think about making a coffee stout? And we were just coming out with our stout, which is our 3 feet deep, within the next couple of months. And we said, I don't think it's going to happen. We've already got plans for a stout. Doesn't make sense for us to do two stouts when we've got three beers in the market, or it would have been four at that point. Mm-hmm. But Just Coffee is a really neat company. I drink their coffee often. We can get out in Spring Green, and so it just kind of stuck in my craw, and I was wondering about it. And at some point, they were bringing in. They were having a party. They were having a fifth anniversary party, and I found out about it 2 weeks before it was happening, and I said, I should make them a beer. And so I found one of their coffees that had the best aroma, right in the bag, before brewing it. And it was, at the time, it was called La Femme, after the growers co-op in Nicaragua that makes it. Now, they've got a few different coffees from that co-op, so now that particular coffee is called Nicaragua. And it smelled so scrumptious. It was just an amazing aroma. It's one of those deals like when you go up and you squeeze bags in the coffee aisle, just like out of you get that little vent and you, wow. It was amazing. And so I decided that since it was a Nicaraguan coffee, I should do something that is not a stout, is not a European style. And so I sort of played with this idea of doing a Mexican style beer, and so I made this Mexican dark Mexican lager with coffee infused in it for their party, and they really loved it and they were excited about it. And I thought, man, this could be interesting. And so we decided, after some time and planning and everything else in Furthermore's world kind of coming into line, we decided to go for it. And so we just brought it to market. It's called Ascura. It uses Just Coffee's Nicaragua, which is made from the beans are from this all-female co-op in Nicaragua. And I don't know, man. They just have a really neat thing going on. They've got more heart than capitalist impulse, which is a good balance for Furthermore, who is blindly capitalistic and will soon take over the world. And so in seeking that balance, we decided to really feature their stuff. And one of the ways to feature that was to do this dark Mexican lager, so that the coffee was really sort of the shining point of the beer. And it really is sort of, you drink it cold, it's very much like iced coffee, but you're drinking beer, so right. Don't lose that.
So have you talked to them about distributing around Madison on bike or skateboard?
No, I haven't talked to them about that. I dropped over there yesterday with the first, yesterday was the first day that it hit the market, and I gifted them a case. I don't know if I gifted them a case. I think that we give them some beer, they give us some coffee, and everybody seems to be okay with it until we get more blindly capitalistic and we start charging them to give us coffee or something like that. But anyways, it was really cool. I don't know. They're just psyched about it. I think they're just happy that we gave them the nod. And of course, for us, to put them on our label legitimately feels really good. You know, it feels good to support them. It feels good to, you know, I don't think we would have done it if they didn't kind of show us some kindness and graciousness from the get-go. So we sort of feel like, you know, we're sort of legit in pimping Just Coffee on our label.
I mean, yeah, we had the opportunity to try it out on the terrace today, you know, and the hot day that it is. And I think we had some friends that wanted to brew a stout, and I was like, that's a terrible idea this time of year. And yeah. I think that this one really knocked it out of the park because you still get, like, the roastiness of the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have, like, the light, refreshing beverage, you know, in the beer, in the Mexican-style lager.
Yeah,
it was really good. It's a great, refreshing experience to have a coffee beer that's not just this huge, heavy, hitting stout or porter.
I mean,
you're on the terrace. It's, what, like 80 degrees today, and it was refreshing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it was coffee, and I never would bring those two together.
Yeah.
And on that one, you did a great job.
And that's sort of an example, again, of that, you know, when Furthermore started, I sort of expected that we were just going to make all these really big beers, you know, and like crazy, just, you know, high alcohol. And in that process of taking a second look at what we're doing and why we're doing it, some of that, you know, refining of what's already out there, you know, and taking it in a direction that people hadn't yet done, that's drinkable, is really fun. You know, if you can make a beer, it's really easy to wow people with big stuff, but if you can wow them with something that's a little bit more mainstream and still say, I really hadn't tasted anything quite like this, then it's very rewarding. Feels good.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. You know, we talked to a couple of bar owners last week on our show on Belgian beers, and at the end of the summary, both of them said something very similar to what you just said. It's sort of, a lot of people have been making these really big beers, and that's kind of the trend now. And we asked them where we thought the future was, and they both said refining traditional styles. So maybe they think the Furthermore is the future of craft.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they think that. Without having talked to them, you know, it's kind of goes without saying. But, yeah, you know, I think that bar owners, you know, people who are in business of selling beer, you know, it's one thing to appeal to the homebrew crowd, because the homebrew crowd's like, did you put any onions in it? Where's the garlic? They just want crazy, wacky stuff. And that's really fun. That's actually a little nod to the guys out in Milwaukee at the Beer Barons, who sat me down after I had a chance to, you know, I was kind of guest speaker at the one of their homebrew club meetings, and someone gave me an onion beer, and it was deliciously awful. It was just the most repugnant, you know, satisfying experience. but so there's that, but you know, bar owners want to sell product, and part of that is you know the capitalist drive, but part of it is you know, just the being aware that refined things do well, you know, and so I think that it's common sense.
All right, great. Well, I guess we have any final comments on that one? Otherwise, we can move on to one of the other beers we tried today.
Let's move on.
All right. Well, the other one, I think we were all impressed with it, was the Knotstock.
Mm-hmm.
We had talked about it a little earlier. It's an American pale ale with, you said, 26 pounds of black pepper?
Yeah. 26 pounds of
specifics. Can you tell us exactly what's in there?
Yeah. Exactly, tell a cherry pepper. The best.
Cut it down to 5 gallons. So you can do that.
Yeah. I tried that on the spot. My math isn't good enough to do that. And I also, you know, when I start giving people numbers, I say, you know, if you make a clone beer, you've got to call it a Knotstock knockoff, because I want to fight you in court over this in the near future.
Drop the K. It's the
Knotstock. Right. The misspelled Knotstock. This was a beer, again, sort of when I was in a brew pub and making different stuff, and part of it was making these big, crazy pale ales and IPAs. One of the things that struck me was that, you know, the whole brewing world is going to start dumping more hops into beer. And if I do that too, you know, where am I? You know, do I stand out? And so I just sort of on a whim made this black pepper beer after having a black pepper biscotti. One of the defining moments in my life when I had a black pepper biscotti and it wasn't awful. It wasn't great, but I thought, well, this is kind of interesting. Black pepper in a cookie. Okay, how would it work in beer? And it worked well. And it plays off of hops so well. you know, it's just, it's funny because black pepper is known so much outside of brewing that people don't expect it. But, you know, most of us, you know, coriander and orange peel, you don't think twice about that being an odd combination as spice in beer, but it's commonplace. And so, you know, we did it and it was successful. And, you know, the beer is sort of like borderline pale ale IPA. We wouldn't call it an IPA because it's not quite big enough. So, you know, you don't want to offend anybody by not giving them, you know,
a hop wall up.
Yeah, a hit on the head. Right. So, the choice of hops and the whole, it's actually kind of a fairly sweet beer, the base beer. Or I should say there's a lot of caramel malt in there to give it this kind of a sweet backbone, because there's this play between bitter hops and prickly pepper, and you know, if it were a weaker beer, that might be an irritant to the palate, and we wanted it to be fun and perky and not irritating. So, yeah.
Well, another one that I sort of wanted to ask you about, my personal favorite of the Furthermore catalog, is the Make Weight.
Oh, yes.
Which is one that was, I think, a limited run, but you said you're thinking
single batch.
Of bringing it back.
Yeah, it was a single batch, and we'll probably bring it back, and we'll bring it back again as sort of a limited release. I don't know when we're going to do that. I think we're sort of running into some trouble with our fatty boombaladdy in that we cannot meet demand. And so we're going to run the fatty longer than expected, and we're coming into fall and apple season. And so we were going to try to sneak a make weight in for August, but I think we're going to end up pushing that back. And yeah, it's just a fun beer, you know. It's sort of the anti-style thing, you know. It's who needs tradition when you've got a brewery at your disposal. And so you know, we did, and obviously we don't shirk tradition. I fully realize as a brewer that I'm working off of borrowed knowledge. But it's an American pale ale, an English pale ale, and a Belgian pale recipe. And the first time I test batched it, it was pretty awful. And so I took sort of the soul of those beers, you know, what sort of distinguished them from the others, and tried to allow some aspect of each to shine in a final beer. And bringing a Belgian yeast in was part of the deal for just, you know, allowing the Belgian ale to have its place. But we used two other yeasts just to sort of really to keep that at bay, so it wasn't simply a Belgian beer. Because if it were just a Belgian yeast, it would produce, you know, so many Belgian kind of fruity and estery flavors that it would just be put in the Belgian category. Put a decent amount of hops in there for bitterness, but we sort of leaned toward the English side on moderate bitterness, and then used some Oregonian hops, you know, traditional or kind of new American hops as a finish hop. And so, you know, it's an interesting beer. It's an interesting beer. It sort of occupies a lot of spaces, and yet is singular in its presence as well. In that there aren't, I don't think there are too many examples of something quite like that out there. So a lot of Belgian candy sugar to sort of ramp up the alcohol, and part of that's so that it's not overly cloying and heavy. So it's not just to ramp up the alcohol, but it's to make a bigger beer high in alcohol that isn't syrup.
And that's the Belgian thing, to sort of make it like a Tripel. It's big, but it's not heavy.
Yeah. And heavy has its place, but right. But that wasn't what we were shooting for.
Totally.
Awesome. The beer that you had mentioned a little bit already is the Fatty Boombaladdy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beer I'd probably say is maybe your most common or most popular beer right now in the market.
Yeah, it's moving.
I mean, the name itself,
the Fatty Boombaladdy was my description of what kind of summertime beer Furthermore was going to make in closed-door sessions with Chris Staples. I think he was screaming in a crowded room, and I was at the bus station on the phone or something. I don't know. But it's all pretty transparent. But anyways, I was telling him that I really love Belgian whites, but there are a lot of Belgian Belgian whites on the market, and how do we distinguish ourselves with the Belgian white? We probably don't. You know, we probably quickly become forgotten. And so I said, well, you know, what about? I was sort of aiming towards a Grand Cru, which is sort of a non-style, but Grand Crus are sort of.
Description.
Yeah, it generally means just like some brewery made a bigger beer than their previous, you know,
right.
And it's a Belgian thing. But anyway, so we were shooting for something that was bigger than a Belgian white. We were thinking about a triple, but I really didn't, you know, when you own a small business and it's a beer company, the only beer you drink is your beer, you know, even though you got into this because you love beer and you want to try all sorts of different stuff, it's what you have available. It becomes the cheapest because you pay, you know, less than wholesale for your beer. Anyways, so I didn't want to drink triples all summer long. And so I said, well, we'll make this sort of Belgian white thing, but, you know, I'll make a big fatty boombaladdy Belgian white. Throw some hops in there. Chris said, describe that again, you know? And I said, you know, a big fatty boombaladdy Belgian white. And for weeks when I was doing more talking than brewing, which I should have been doing, I should have been making test batches, but I had this idea. And so the concept and the name sort of all came together in one fell swoop, but I didn't know that was the name. Chris eventually, once I gave him, finally, you know, a week before we went to production with this thing, I gave him a test batch of it, and he really liked it. And he said, wow, that's great. So that's the fatty boombaladdy. And I said, what? You know, no, you can't call a beer fatty boombaladdy. He said, yes, you can. You've done it for the last 3 weeks. So yeah, that was sort of the way it happened. The fatty boombaladdy was named and conceived in one fell swoop.
Excellent.
So, yeah, it's a big Belgian beer. It's got a nice hop presence to it, which makes it a little bit cleaner, a little more crisp, you know. It's still sweet and perfumey, but it sort of brushes that off the palate. So,
cool.
Good stuff.
Awesome. Well, then, so you're saying that's kind of like your most common one on the market. But I guess the one that, you know, after reading a lot about your brewery, the one that really kind of like rooted you in Wisconsin was the Proper.
The Proper.
By its ties to the American Players Theater. Can you talk about that one a little bit?
Yeah. The Proper, I think I mentioned a little earlier, was, you know, we were making a beer for American Players Theater. And for me, that was, you know, my sister is in the core company there. She's an actress, and I had a lot of pride in the theater. And a lot of that, part of that is the sibling bond, but a lot of it's just going to the theater. And, you know, you're driving in the middle of nowhere. You pull into this gravel parking lot, and then you start walking up the hill through the woods, and it's a really, you know, it's sort of like, what's going on here? And then you come to this clearing at the top of the hill, and there's this gorgeous though rustic theater, and I don't know, you know, I've seen theater for years. My sister's in the theater, my mother was involved in the theater, and I always liked theater, but there was something about American Players Theater that was special, and the term that I use a lot is fantastical. It just, you know, it really puts you in the space of enjoying a story as told by the actors and, of course, all the supporting cast there, directors and production people. So, I don't know, a lot of thought went into it, and it's sort of our you know, least descriptive beer. But in terms of, you know, again, what we're trying to do is turn people on. We're trying to push things forward. And the real crux of the making of the Proper had less to do with, you know, the flavor impact in the beer community as it did with, you know, how do you make something special for this special place? Mm-hmm. And what is that special thing? And again, you know, exercising some restraint and not making the biggest, craziest beer that wouldn't appeal to that crowd. We wanted to make something that had some flavor and yet was comfortable, you know, was something that they could go to without there being a lot of obstacles to their enjoyment. So we played with all sorts of Shakespearean names, and in the end, we felt a little cheeky about that. Chris and I, you know, we didn't want to like go full out Shakespeare with it. Mm-hmm. We sort of wanted to just give them the nod. And one of the things that I feel about, you know, as rustic and backwoods as the location is, it's a very proper endeavor, and you know, and so thus the term Proper. And yeah, there
Excellent.
You go.
Awesome. Well, another one that we had a chance to taste today was your stout that you had mentioned briefly earlier,
yeah.
The 3 feet deep.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the thoughts behind that one.
The 3 feet deep is
Awesome.
That's the word I was looking for. Awesome. I couldn't find it.
Help me out.
The 3 feet deep is of all the beers, kind of the closest to my soul. I really made in honor of my mother, who's from Ireland, and I think it's better than any beer that Ireland has ever produced.
That's a bold statement.
Yes, it is. It's a bold statement.
You've had every single one, I assume.
I've had three or four.
Yeah.
Well, that was at the age of 15. Yeah, that's all they got is three or four. But, yeah, you know, had my first illicit pint in a pub at 15. And there's something about the black pint. You know, you can kind of sit alone in a room with a black pint and not feel like you're drinking alone. You know, you can have a kind of a quiet understanding with the black hole of beer. And so there's something very special about that. But if you're a beer drinker, a stout can become bland, especially a dry Irish stout. There, you know, not a lot to it. And so I wanted to sort of take it someplace where I just hadn't experienced it, and peat smoked malt was that thing. So we get malt from an English distiller. I'm sorry, an English maltster that makes all of their malt goes to Scottish distilleries for making Scotch whiskey, and a descriptor for a lot of beverages or foods in general is earthy, and it doesn't really get more earthy than peat smoked malt. And it's a special thing. It's got kind of a warm emotion to it, you know, like beyond the flavor. So it's kind of simple. It's not our most popular beer, but those who like it love it and really stand behind it.
Yeah. Another one I wanted to ask you about quickly here. Fall, unfortunately, not far away for
us
in the psyche, and you do the Fallen Apple as sort of your autumn seasonal. So tell us a little bit about that one.
That's a fun one. That's I've always liked apple ciders, but I could never really. I can never get past one pint, you know, not because I was falling on the floor, but because I just, they become thin, and the flavor is very sort of ethereal, and it sort of dissipates, and so I wanted to, I wanted to play with cider, and so I made a beer in a brew pub that was about 40% cider, 60% beer, and it was okay, but it was super tart, because people always complain, people who don't like those beers or who say they don't like them but really haven't tried them will say, oh, those are too sweet, I don't like that. But it ferments all the way down. All the sugar goes away. The yeast consumes all the sugar, and you're left with the tartness of the apple, and it's super puckering if you don't have a beer that's substantial enough to support it. And so what we did with the Fallen Apple was we made a beer that was substantial enough to support it, this big cream ale. It's got it's a cream ale because we use cream sugar. We use some milk sugar, which is unfermentable, to give a little bit of lasting sweetness, again, so that it doesn't turn out to be this really, you know, sour beverage. And that was a beer.
Mouthfeel too, lactose.
Gives us a mouthfeel. Yeah, gives it like some smoothness, rounds, and that's part of it. You know, part of the thing is to not just give. It's not just sweetness to balance out the tartness, but tartness, you know, it's so sharp and so drying on the palate, and so that mouthfeel, it's amazing the difference it makes. If you've had the tart version, it's amazing the difference that it makes. And so this was the beer that I really made for my bride for our wedding, for Kelly, and it was our wedding ale, and. I should give props to, I'm sure they're listening out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Sure. Chris Heim was a brewer out there who made something of this sort. And in fact, you know, when I called him and said, so how did you make that? He told me. And at the time, I was only, you know, working out of a little brew pub in Pittsburgh. And so maybe he figured no big threat. but now that I am this major player in the Midwest brewing world, he's probably getting nervous and feeling regret. But anyways, Chris Heim helped me a bunch with that one. And it's very champagne like. Chris Staples thinks it's more Chardonnay like, and he always tries to say that before I say it tastes like champagne. But it's got this effervescent quality, and it still has that ethereal apple thing going on. But it's rooted in a base beer, which is great if you're a beer lover.
All right, so you know, as we said, that was Aaron from Furthermore. A recap on all their great beers. We've gone out, we've tasted them all. I really am liking them more and more as we go through. Really excited to try out the Fallen Apple again now that we're in the fall time.
Yeah, for sure. And I must say, I went and picked up a six-pack of 3 Feet Deep the other week, and it's a phenomenal beer. A little bit thick for the summertime, at least the Madison summertime, but it's just such a good beer. It's lighter than most stout, so it was still an all right choice.
With that, we're going to be signing off. We want to remind you guys to go to www.beertalktoday.blogspot.com. Go on, look at the poll, leave us your comments, and join us next week when we discuss the beer and food pairing phenomena.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for tuning in.
Take care, all.